Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
White House on this beautiful St. Patrick's Day. It was remarked upon that the fountain is the appropriate green this year. Last year, Michelle asked the White House team to make the fountain green, and it was a little tepid.
So anyway, our dear leader is off to Rio tonight with his wife, mother-in-law, children, and I woke up and I kept saying to myself, why is he going to Rio? This is a great embarrassment for the president. I mean, the world is in terrible shape, radiation coming out of Japan. I'm thinking to myself now, and I'm thinking out loud as I speak to you on the Savage Nation. I'm trying to tell you what we found. You know, every once in a while I hit it out of the park. I'm like Babe Ruth. Most of the time, I walk around the bases lately, and I do so very elegantly and succinctly. And every once in a while, one goes right out of Yankee Stadium. That's today, March 18th, 2011. Mark it down, because I think we have an exclusive here on the Savage Nation, which we're going to post on michaelsavage.com, which is a secret list of those traveling with Obama to Brazil. Now, how did I arrive at this? You can't find it on any of the sites. It doesn't exist. How did I find it? Well, I started to figure out, why is he going? It's an embarrassment for the president to flee at this time. You got Japan, you got Libya, you got the Middle East, you got a fiscal crisis. You've got gridlock in Washington, D.C. You name it, there's a crisis and he's leaving. So it's not good for him to leave, but he's got to go, I said to myself. So why does he have to go? And I try to apply the logic of a reasonably intelligent man who's followed the news since he's 18 years old. What I figured out was, is he made a commitment to certain corporate executives who would be traveling with him to Brazil for, you know, the prestige of traveling with the president and to open certain doors. And they either will make or have made major contributions to his reelection campaign. In other words, it's a part of his reelection strategy. But the question is, who's going with him? You can't find it on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox News. Although Fox News has hundreds of reporters or researchers, I have a couple of people. I called up Beowulf Rockland this morning. I said, Beowulf, could you find out who's traveling with President Obama to Rio? He says, well, that's a great idea. So where did we find the secret list? Well, my producer, Beowulf, was only able to find this information from a Brazilian news source, and he had to have it translated from the Portuguese. No English news source that we could find would publish their names. And I'm going to keep rolling the drums and tell you that we have a list of those going to Brazil with Obama. Some of them you can pretty much guess. There's the ever-present peripatetic Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, the man who gave us the reactors in Japan. Old Jeff is on the trip with him. We don't know if they're traveling on Air Force One with the president and the first family, which is a secondary question, by the way. Why are his wife and children and mother-in-law coming along with him to Brazil? Is this another $75,000 a day vacation for the family? Why is this unusual? I'd like to know. Is it unusual for a president's family to travel with him on official business? Or do they reimburse him for the ice cream and the ribs? I don't really know how that works. Do you think it's appropriate for top CEOs, including Jeff Immelt, who runs the Obama-friendly MSNBC and General Electric, to be jetting off to Rio with him? Of course not. But that's the least of the problems. So you could figure, all right, the guy has business in the GE is a global corporation. They have business in Brazil. What's wrong with that? It might produce 50 jobs in America and 5,000 jobs in Brazil. I mean, that's the way things go today. The president justifies his going to Brazil by saying it's jobs, jobs, jobs. But we well know he means jobs for Brazil, right? And so let's look at the list together of those who are going. But before we do, we have to look at the news of the day. Japan, what's going on in Japan? Well, the same as usual. There's a horrible situation. And as we predicted, based upon the evidence, there is some very low radiation detected on the West Coast. Do you believe the government's data? Yes, I do. Normally, I don't. But let's stop getting crazy now. And let's not rush to the left and to the right-wing maniacs who are now saying we're all going to die from radiation. It's logically almost impossible for the amount of radiation, by what I've been able to read, okay, the amount of radiation that has been emanating from the damaged nuclear plants was very low to begin with. That's number one. I mean, that's A. It was not an atomic bomb that went off. And when you add up the 5,000 mile and the dispersal across the wide reaches of the Pacific Ocean, it's a small amount of radiation. So stop getting, you know, paranoid and crazy already. Stop with the Y2K. It's like Y2K, many of you went out and you broke out the drums of wheat you've been saving that you couldn't sell on eBay. You're ready to start eating it tonight. You don't need to eat it, okay? Not yet. It doesn't mean you shouldn't get survival food. I'm getting survival food, by the way. Absolutely. I'll tell you about that another time. Yeah, it's one of my advertisers on, honest to God, Wise Foods. But I'm not giving them a plug for nothing or charging them. I'm telling you, I am getting survival foods, but not for this particular event. Anyway, that's number one. Number two, Libya. Libya outsmarted Obama, of course. That's very difficult. He said, yes, we're going to stop because we don't want to get into a war with NATO and with the UN. And then the minute he said that, he went ahead and attacked and killed 50 people at least. So there's number two. And number three, the president has picked the University of Connecticut to win the third straight women's basketball championship. You should mark that down if you're a handicapper. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What else is in the news? Everything, and we'll cover it all here on the Savage Nation. The most important story will shortly be posted on the website, a secret list of those traveling with Obama to Brazil. Can you wait to hear this? Are you just itching to know? Are you shocked to find out that Jeffrey Immelt is amongst those traveling? Well, there are others, and I'll give them to you momentarily on the Savage Nation. But before we do, we've got to go back again to the president's, what was it called? St. Paddy's Day celebration in clip three.
I am not going to stand up here very long because, as the old Irish saying goes, everyone is wise until he speaks. But the Irish also tells us that what fills the eye fills the heart. And tonight, in this room filled with so many friends, both
all right,
old
we get
and
the
new,
general drift of things. That's okay. A president has to do that on various ethnic holidays, and there's nothing unusual about this. Of course, it's unusual to do it at a time like this, after doing basketball predictions all week and then the parties over the weekend with basketball players and leaving for Brazil. I mean, that's the weird part. I know it's March 18th and the kids in college are going off on a spring break. I understand that. He is jealous because the frat boys are rushing off to Orlando and to Daytona Beach where the girls are. And so, therefore, the president is just itching to get out of town. He needs a break, that's all. I mean, the tsunami. What can he do about that? He's not God, right? Can he do anything about the nuke meltdown? Can he do anything about Libya? Well, yes, he can. Well, at least his bio said, yes, we can. Or at least his campaign slogan said, yes, we can. And what it came down to was, yes, we might, or maybe. You know what I'm saying? Charlie Sheen has sold out two nights at Radio City Music Hall to show you how stupid the people are in New York City, to show you how impossible it is to make a dent on the mind of the masses. No matter how you try, the masses will always be the masses. And as I said to someone this morning, if you think Jersey Shore is typical of the low mentality of America, go and watch a few segments of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is Jersey Shore for Jews. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring in the lilt of Irish laughter.
And so as we celebrate together, let us take a moment to appreciate all that Ireland has given to America. The faith we keep, the family we hold close, the laughter and song and warmth we feel when surrounded by the ones we love.
Erin Go Bra. Well, he is a bit Irish. I mean, there's 1/16th or something. I don't know what they say. But the thing is, why not? The Irish had a lot to do with the founding of America. 1/3 of the Continental troops were from of Irish descent. They've always been great, loyal, patriotic citizens. So why not celebrate St. Paddy's Day, since he drove the snakes out of Ireland? We could use St. Paddy right now in the Congress of the United States of America. That's what we can use right now to drive the snake oil salesman out of Congress. One side note before I read you the list of the secret list of those traveling with Mr. Obama to Brazil. Has anyone asked this question, the logical question that no one's asked? We keep hearing the word Libyan rebels, Libyan rebels. You're supposed to think of James Dean in a leather jacket. Where'd they get the heavy weapons from? What do you mean, where do they get these heavy weapons from? They're not firing 1918 Springfields at Gaddafi. Somebody has provided the so-called rebels with very heavy weapons. Where did they get them from? Rocket launchers, etc. These are heavy weapons. These are not light weapons. This is not just rifles and pistols. So somebody has provided heavy weaponry for the rebels. And I got to tell you something else. Be careful, be careful, be careful, because the old adage of, you know, the devil you know rather than the devil you don't know. Do you have any idea who the so-called rebels are going to be led by as soon as they knock Gaddafi out of the picture? Al-Qaeda has wanted Gaddafi to be gone. So again, this could be another mistake. See, we always react without thinking. Once again, we react without thinking. But let me get down to the business of the business. So who's traveling to the president, with the president, to Brazil? We're the only ones who found it. We had to go to Brazil to find it, translated from the Portuguese. And here's the list. Jeffrey R. Immelt, CEO of MSNBC and General Electric. And that's number one. Oh, that, all right, so that business in Brazil, not a big deal. Aris Kandris, CEO Westinghouse. Okay, so what's the big deal about that? I don't know. Let's work the list, and you'll find out in a minute. Who else is with the president on the trip to Brazil? Would you? By the way, if this list were not so incendiary, why would it not be published, as a matter of fact, in the newspapers in America? Why are they hiding who's going there? So I'll keep reading the list. It begs the question, if I'm the only one who found it, in Brazil, in a Brazilian newspaper, in Portuguese, something's up here, okay? Wait till you hear the last name, then you'll know why. James D. Hackett, CEO of Anna Darko. It's like Donnie Darko. Anna Darko Petroleum Corporation. John V. Faraci, CEO International Paper. All right, big deal. I got to sneeze. Hold on a minute. I got a sneeze controller here. I hope that blocked it. Did that block it, Phil? And finally, but last but not least of the major domos going with the president to Brazil is one Anthony S. Harrington, which is the most interesting of the bunch. He is the CEO of Albright Stonebridge Group. Now, who's that? Does the name Sox Burger ring a bell to you? Remember old Sox Burger, old Sammy Burger? Nice guy, Sandy. Remember Sandy Burger, the man who hid state secrets in his underwear and socks? Well, he works for Anthony S. Harrington at Albright Stonebridge Group, as well as does the lunatic, the craziest woman in the history of the U.S. government, Madeleine K. Albright. Apparently, Albright and Berger are two foreign agents, and they work for Mr. Harrington. Now, before Mr. Harrington leaves the public spotlight, he served as U.S. ambassador to Brazil during a time of unprecedented bilateral engagement between the two countries. He was nominated by none other than Bill Clinton and confirmed by the U.S. Senate with bipartisan support in a record 12 days. He is also co-chair of the Brazil-U.S. Business Council and of the Advisory Council of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center. So on the face of it, there's nothing unkosher, so to speak, about this secret list of those traveling with Obama to Brazil. But there is a question that remains. Then if there's nothing untoward, to use a high-class word, about this trip, then why were these names so hard to find? Why do we have to get them in Portuguese? That's number one. We also have a list for you of the business summit. Obama was supposed to close the CNI business summit in Brazil, but apparently he's backed out of that. The first speaker, well, anyway, I don't want to read it to you again. There'll be Anthony Harrington of the Sox fame. And then speaking, the keynote will be Dr. Stephen Hachu, Secretary of Energy, United States of America. And then after that, the speech will be by Aris Condris, Westinghouse, James Hackett, Anadarko Petroleum. I like reading the names. It reminds me of that scene in The Godfather where they introduce each other around the table. I mean, there's no slur intended. You remember where they give the gold phone and John Faraci, Chairman and CEO, International Paper. Remember that scene in The Godfather where they introduce and then finally at 3:30 we were supposed to have heard a speech, introduction of Barack Obama, President of the United States of America. I think he's still President of the United States of America. And here we are. So that's the list. So this looks like a gigantic fundraising tour. And indeed, many of these CEOs are documented to have donated to Democratic candidates and causes. But for the president to embarrass himself by traveling to Rio at the time of the Japanese nuclear meltdown, the war in Libya, the Middle East on fire, the economy in ruins, and the budget in a deadlock is astounding. We have to assume this is a fundraising trip for Obama and that those traveling with him will pay or have paid a handsome fee to do so. It will soon be making a major contribution to him or to NPR. And what about Mr. Obama's family? They're lovely people, lovely people. But why is his wife, children, and his mother-in-law coming along with him to Brazil? Is this fair? Is this going to be another taxpayer-funded vacation for them? Will the First Lady be seen eating ice cream on the beach at Ipanema while lecturing us about growing carrots in our backyard? These are some of the generalized comments that have been made thus far. And before I take your calls at 1-800-449-8255, I should tell you that we're having the biggest full moon in 18 years on Saturday, as told to you earlier on the Savage Nation. That's right. The biggest full moon in 18 years occurs Saturday night, along with the highest tide, which, according to my expert on from Tuesday, the man who has predicted the Loma Prieta earthquake, that's a good indicator that a window on a new earthquake on the West Coast has been opened up, thanks to a fluke of orbital mechanics that brings the moon closer to Earth than it has been in more than 18 years. The biggest full moon of 2011 will occur on Saturday.
Savage.
When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring in the lilt of Irish laughter. You can hear
when we think about a family like the Kennedys, we see a steadfast belief in the importance of service. The duty each of us has to stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves.
That's right. That's it. They were all good. All good through and through. Hell, that did Mary Jo Kopechne. For those who can't stand up for themselves. Of course, she was drowned. How could she stand up for herself? Anywho, that's old stuff. So I gave you the secret list of those traveling with Obama to Brazil, and that was the end of it, and no one cares. That's all. Boom. What are you going to do about it? Well, something new about that. You're more interested in the Radio City Music Hall and some stoner going there and making an idiot of himself. Who knows? He could be a newsman on Fox next week. They get him a set of blackboards with glasses and elbow patches, and the next thing you know, he'll be the professor or the next professor. And that's the world. We live in a traveling circus. That's all. But why is he going to Brazil is the issue. Why Brazil now? Because he committed to it. They must have paid a lot of money to be on that plane. That's all. He can't cancel a trip. There's a lot of money for his reelection campaign for that introduction and that kind of prestige. You know what I'm saying, or not? And it's going to create jobs there, not here. The president says he's going to create jobs for the Brazilians, of course. I'd like to see how many jobs it actually creates in America. I doubt it. Maybe a few congressional aides will result from it. That'll be about it. All right, look, I made the point. It's a Friday. You don't want to hear any more. You don't care. We'll move on. That's all. I'll move on. I can move on. I realize in the East Coast already it's dark, it's late. Oh, we had daylight savings time, maybe it's a little light out there. It's already 6:35. No one cares. They're tuned out already. It's miserable here on the West Coast. We got another 8 days of rain. I know you're not supposed to mention weather, but I'll mention it anyway. I never saw weather like this. It's horrible. Rain. It's like Seattle here in San Francisco. The city is so horrendous socially. The only redeeming quality of San Francisco is its weather and architecture. So when you have horrible weather, there's nothing here. There's no reason to live, as a matter of fact. If I didn't have a big event coming up on the 24th, which is Thursday at the museum, I'd leave. I'd head to Florida. I get out of here. I got to get out of here. I'll even take the heat and the sand and the lizard people, anything. I'll even take the oxygen tanks coming out of the Italian restaurants, the walkers and the oxygen tanks, anything but this. I had the worst experience of my restaurant life in recent years last night in a chain restaurant here in Sanford, in the Marin County area. It's not that the food was bad. It's always average. The food is average, but the tablecloths are white. It's the Lipton tea of Italian food. It's a chain. They're not bad. You know what I mean? You can count on the tablecloth and the warm bread. After that, it goes downhill. But the problem is, here's what I've noticed in restaurants. Once the restaurant is taken over by the staff, everything collapses. And they're out of control in this restaurant at Corte Madera. I've got to tell you, you've never seen such hostile people in your life as in this restaurant. The managers try their best. Once you let illegal aliens take over your restaurant, and they, by the way, they start cooking the food for their own taste, that's another mistake restaurants make. When you start feeding the staff with the restaurant's general menu, what they're going to do is alter the menu for their own tastes, and you're not eating any Italian food anymore. I'm not against Mexican food, but I don't go into this place for Mexican food. If I want Mexican food, I go to a Mexican restaurant. I go here for ersatz Italian food. And now it tastes like a taco without shells in there, which I'm used to. I don't go there. I go for a drink and the bread and a hangout. And but last night reached a new low of hostility, so I walked out. I said to the manager, she said, I wish you'd put it on the radio because we don't know what to do to control them. So I figured I'd mention it without mentioning the name of the restaurant. That's all. I wound up in the war. So I went out of default because it was raining. I went across the street to the worst seafood I've ever had in my entire life. Pacific Catch. I've never seen anything like this. They brought me a piece of shriveled up ahi. It looked like it just came out of the Fukushima reactor. There was less than an ounce of meat on it for $14. And the fish looked like it was just dredged up from the bottom of the reactor after a meltdown. Dried and shriveled up. Again, hostile behind the counter. Kept peering out and laughing. We were the last two customers in there. They took 30 minutes. They took as long as they could. They kept snickering at the gringos, and they gave me a piece of fish to look at like it came out of the reactor. Is it any wonder I'm frustrated? But then you add it all up. What's the difference? It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. What do you expect in the Bay Area? When you have a city that gives over to drug dealers, when you have a city that calls itself a sanctuary city after they've killed people, run people over, committed every kind of murder and mayhem known to mankind, and the city won't stand up to them. Why should the brethren, who are not criminals who work in restaurants, not get the message that you can spit on the people who you're serving, and they're not going to say a word? Why should they care? Why should they not? I'm sorry to go off like this. It's more interesting than Brazil and Libya. You know what I'm saying? Did I spend too much time on my own restaurant experience, or shall I go spend a little more time on it? Because the other night I had a very good meal. The night before, I was in San Francisco, and I went to visit my friend Lorenzo Petroni, who owns the North Beach restaurant. Oh, he and I, we're like old brothers from the old school. We sit and crack each other up. He picks on me every time I come in. I sit down. It's a jammed restaurant. Did you eat? No, I didn't. Sit down. He starts serving me. I said, wait a minute. He says, no. I said, no. He wants to serve you what he wants to give you. I said, Lorenzo, please, I know you love me. Stop it. Serve me what I want. Then he starts commenting on my clothing and my hair. And I said to him, if you do it one more time, I'm never coming in here. He laughed hysterically. I said, I'll start it with your hair and clothing. Yeah, it's some old world thing. It's something we do with each other. Anyway, we had a lot of fun in there. But the food was superb. That's all. The Petrali Soul. No butter. They know me already. No butter. But I have a dish that no one on earth makes but him. It's called the Savage Eggplant. It's with no cheese. Costs you the same, but it has no cheese. He makes more money, but everyone asks for it now. Could you believe it? He laughs. They want it without the cheese. It's actually phenomenal. Did you ever eat an eggplant with marinara sauce on it? The eggplant's so puffy that it feels like you're eating a meatball. Unbelievable. Why am I doing this? I'm tired of the news already. Why am I doing it? You're probably more interested in this than you are with blackboards and the explanations and the moon and the tides and the supermoon and the... do you want me to go on to the news? I did already the big breakthrough. It'll be up on my website, and that's it, and you didn't care anyway. What's going on in the Middle East? Oh, nothing. Nothing's going on. Obama says Gaddafi must withdraw forces, but doesn't demand his departure, and he flew off to Brazil to taste the sugar cane. He says, you must comply. This is after 31 days of letting him kill the so-called rebels. Now, and after everyone said they're even the British are sending planes. Even they're sending planes, and they're staging them. They're getting ready. They're getting ready for a fight, the Brits. And the French, they're getting ready. Everyone's getting ready. Everyone's getting ready. They're moving things, and assets are being moved in place, and overtime for the professional. We had a bank robbery here in Corte Madera the other day. Some lunatic went nuts with a note. He let everyone out of the bank, the tellers, the other, and he kept everyone nuts. The 104 police showed up. I swear, I read the number. I couldn't believe it. There were machine guns and tax squads. There was FBI. They closed off the streets. 104 police. Tell me what the overtime cost was for that one lunatic in the bank. And by the way, why don't his parents have to pay for the police overtime? What do they need him for? They had two SWAT teams. They had local police, CHP, LSMFT, they had FBI. They had county police, sheriffs. Everyone was on a walkie-talkie. Everyone was covering it with news on trucks, with generators. One lone lunatic in a bank. And he wouldn't come out till 10 o'clock at night. 102 or 104 police. Police were there. Could you imagine the overtime bill for those hours just because of a lunatic? I can guarantee you the parents won't pay for it. They should pay for it, by the way. But no one pays for anything. You understand that. It's an out-of-control country. Nobody pays for anything. Which is why living well is the best revenge, as said by some old Brit. And I don't know who was it. No, was it Lady Astor who said that? I don't know. I know that her Irish thighs are smiling wherever she may be, even in heaven. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So as we celebrate together, let us take a moment to appreciate all that Ireland has given to America. The faith we keep, the family we hold close.
Yeah, well, look, laughter, he's got to do it. And I have a question. Why are the Irish such great fighters and warriors? I saw a great show on the history of the Irish last night on one of the channels, History Channels. And I didn't know that there was a great wave of Irish immigrants to America prior to the potato famine. And a good portion of the Continental Army was comprised of Irish who became phenomenal patriots and fought the British because of what the British had done to them in Ireland. It's an amazing story when you think about it. Did you know Andrew Jackson was Irish? I didn't know any of this. This is an amazing story, you know. The few Irish friends I have are from the bars. That's about it. Actually, the only friends I have in the world are from restaurants and bars. It comes down to it. The end of the day. I mean, where you go to eat and drink is really all that matters. What else really matters, right? By the way, we found it who said living well is the best revenge. It was not Lady Astor. It was George Herbert. Never heard of him, but he lived between 1593 and March 1633. He was a Welsh-born English poet. Very nice. Living well is the best revenge. You know what that means, right? Well, whatever it means, you know what it, you can figure it out pretty easily. Erin Go Brath is not a reference to lingerie, by the way, since we're talking Irish things. Erin Go Brath is the anglicization of a Gaelic phrase and is used to express allegiance to Ireland. It is most often translated as Ireland forever. So if you say Erin Go Brath on a subway car, you could probably get arrested for some type of verbal molestation. They could assume that you're saying something to a lady on the subway, and before you know it, you'll be pummeled to death. Did you see the link on my website of a fight on a New York subway over a spaghetti? Someone was eating spaghetti on a subway. Oh, my God. My God, what a country. Thank God I left. I mean, I used to ride the subway when I was a young social worker, then a young teacher. It was horrendous then. It's a nightmare now. I can't believe it. Eating on a subway. What's next? They're going to give birth on the subway car and leave the baby there on the way to a dance? I've never seen anything. Ugh, slurping spaghetti out of a container on a packed subway car? Why don't they just do their laundry? They can bring, like, laundry along next time. Well, what's next on a subway car? It's unbelievable what New York and everywhere, whatever. Look, the world is not what it was. Is it ever going to be what it was? Was it ever what it was? Is it ever what it was? Everyone says it never what it was. It was. It wasn't so great when I was young either. It was better when the guys before me said what it was, and before them they said it was better. Before them they said it was better. By the way, the Irish first settled in Brooklyn, in the worst neighborhood in town called Gravesend. And if you look carefully, Gravesend, Brooklyn, is where there's a graveyard where old Dutch pioneers were buried from the 1600s. I had a nightmare about it after watching the show. Now, I don't like to watch anything with graves in it. That's all. My birthday's March 31st. I could do without the graves and I don't want to hear about it, the thought about it. But the thing is, Gravesend, it stuck in my head because I never really put the two together. You hear Gravesend. Do you think graves? No. But moreover, you have the Irish coming into the poorest neighborhood, the first slums in New York were in Gravesend. And what was there? Graves. Dutch. The Dutch were there before with the Peter Stuyvesant, as a kid in grade school, with the stump, with the leg, with the funny outfit. Remember though? You had to color him in. You had to color. Who knew what Peter Stuyvesant was? I knew Stuyvesant Town, and my uncle owned a deli there once, and I got a pork sandwich, roast pork. I liked it. And they had Rheingold. Who remembers anything from those? I remember my uncle, God rest his soul. He died about a year or two ago. Came out of the war, fought in Japan. Speaking of Japan, I mean, it's not a big deal, but he, like millions of other Americans, came back, gave me a samurai sword. To this day, I can remember, he brought home his nephew. What was I, 3 years old? Here, Michael, he gave me a samurai sword and a little one, a dagger that you commit Harry Carey with to go with it, that he took off a sword. They all had to throw the swords away. And he gave them to me. I had them for years, but I was a mischievous child. I took the sword apart. I unraveled the hand. I wanted to know what was inside the hand wrap thing. I unraveled it and ruined the whole samurai sword. Today must be worth a lot of money. What's steel, right? You can make a Buick out of that thing if you melted it down. The amount of steel left in a Buick today is probably less than in that samurai sword. But with the composites. So he gave me a sword. Yeah, and you know, a lot of the young men came out of the war. Why am I doing this? Would you rather I do the jet stream and then the nuclear danger or Biden or Obama and Mrs. Obama? So he opens a grocery years later. Well, we were so thrilled to have a family member with a grocery store because kids don't really understand capitalism. You assume if you have a relative in the grocery business that you can eat for free and take groceries home for nothing. You know, what do you know? I mean, everything to a child is like there's no concept of money. It, like most people on welfare, in other words, they still think it the same way. You know, take it from someone else. The very childish view of things. Someone's paying for it. But my parents would go in. The way they did it in those days was if a relative or a friend opened a restaurant or a store, you went in the first day and you shopped. And it was like Goodwill. You bought big amounts of like groceries. You know what I mean? You paid for it. Which was a nice gesture. That's how you broke the ice for the guy. But he made a sandwich. It was across from Stuyvesant Town and next to that spaghetti joint I wrote a poem about. When pasta was spaghetti. Remember I said the 50 cents a plate with the steam in the window? My famous Italian poem, When Pasta Was Spaghetti. Great poem. Who remembers any of this stuff, the great things I've done over these 16 years in radio? I remember it, that's all. I remember Mama. That's all I can tell you. March 24th, which is coming up, I will have been on the radio. How long have I been on the radio now? 16, 17 years? They said I wouldn't last 6 months. They said I was too New York. Can you imagine? And they threw every impediment in my way. I'm not boasting. It could happen tomorrow. But look at this, what goes on in life. The best 16 years of my life. The hardest years of my life have been radio. The toughest of my life. And I ask myself, I hear about guys my age and 10 years younger, 15 years younger. Where is he? Where's Bill? He's off this winter on his yacht in Mexico, his boat in Mexico. Not a particularly wealthy man. He's a mechanic. But he sailed his yacht down to Mexico, and he's there the whole winter. He wanted to be away. I could do that, but I would get bored. What, I'm going to figure out a way to have a sundowner? Every night, another bar? I could not do that. God bless you if you could do it. Play When Pasta Was Spaghetti while I'm catching a breath. The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's Clam Bar, the one behind the greased-over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then, in neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged-over window on a cold winter's eve. There was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them, bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming, and men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smile scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Yeah, well, now you only have tarantella, but that was good. It was good. It brings a little, chokes me up a little bit. I don't know when I did that 10, 15 years ago when I was a local host. My voice still sounds the same, doesn't it? It does sound the same. I haven't altered at all. This is the real McCoy here, but that was good. That was very good. I got to congratulate. No, you're going to congratulate me? No one will. In the media, they hate my guts. Nobody mentions the show. What can I do? So I have to mention my show because I entertain you. Now, if you want real intelligence, you don't come here. You go to NPR for real insights. I mean, you go to important sources like ABC, CBS. You go to guys on ABC to get the real inside dope and real intelligent insights, not to me. I'm merely an entertainer. Don't confuse me with a real journalist. Not a real journalist would have gone to a school of journalism and been schooled in how to report things objectively. Oh, right. Oh, Lordy, here we are. Do you realize the first hour of the show has flown by so fast that I regret having to tell you that there's a short commercial break and news and weather and everything and traffic and all that coming up, after which time I shall return to continue talking about who's on a secret trip to Brazil with Obama, Aaron Gobra, and why you shouldn't be worrying about Jeffrey Immelt, Aris Kandris, James Hackett, and Anthony Harrington. Remember, Sox is not going.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Stand up here very long because, as the old Irish saying goes, everyone is wise until he speaks.
Hey, how about playing some Ipanema music? Because the president is on the way to Panama probably in a short while, or has already left. After all, it's the weekend, you know, TGIF. He had a rough week between the basketball scores and St. Patty's Day. Got a trip to, with the family, of course. It's official business, but that doesn't matter. Since when does any kind of protocol matter in this White House? The Stan Getz? Yeah, it's very sweet. Reminds me of the Playboy Bunny, the whole thing. So Obama Elementary School to close its doors citing low enrollment. That's a very sad story for those of you who voted for the president. School bearing his name in Asbury Park, New Jersey, was shuttered because of low enrollment. I guess the motto will be, a communist mind is a terrible thing to waste. 1-800-449-8255. Robert De Niro testifies against art director accused of stealing from his father's art collection. He could use a haircut, I'll tell you that. They say older guys with long hair doesn't look good. That hippie look is not good on older men. That is true. I'm not sure about the shaved look, but they start to look like almost homeless, an older guy. I don't know where they feel debonair with the very long hair. The beard and the long hair doesn't work, even if it's washed. very homeless looking. He goes, be taken for a bag man at that. But I don't know. All right, to each his own. Now, a lot of guys go the other way because they're bald on the top. They give it a shave job, and they feel they look better, you know, shaved close. It's a man. The hair thing is a terrible mix-up. But let's not worry about trivial things. Let's talk about serious things like Libya. Libya. No one even knows which side to be on. We know Gaddafi's an evil SOB, no good son of a gun murdering, airplane hijacking, right? But on the other hand, what do you mean rebels? Who are the rebels? If Al-Qaeda's for the rebels, why should we be for the rebels? You know what I'm saying? Why should we be? If you watch what's going on here, Egypt is a mess. The big loser here is democracy. Mubarak will turn out to be the George Washington of Egypt. But you don't want to know this, because all you know is the news story put out by Anderson Cooper, who had his hair messed up. You don't want to hear what actually happened after the bastards in the media wrecked the country by telling you it was all the young boys with tight dungarees that were over there with the iPods. Every time I try to tell you the truth, I get worked up. So here's a list of those traveling with him to Brazil. Jeffrey Immelt, GE. Aris Candris Westinghouse, James Hackett, Anadarko Petroleum Corp. And over here we have the head of International Paper, John Faraci. And over here with the gold phone, we have Anthony S. Harrington, Albright Stonebridge Group, who is the boss of Sox Burger. Do you think it's appropriate for him to be jetting off to Rio at this time? It is not appropriate. Play the Godfather clip for me now, the one I was looking for.
I want to thank this distinguished group of American industrialists
a este distinguido grupo de industriales norteamericanos
for continuing to work with Cuba,
por continuar trabajando con Cuba,
for the greatest period of prosperity,
por el más grande periodo de prosperidad
in her entire history,
en toda nuestra historia.
Mr. William Shaw,
señor William Shaw,
representing the General Fruit Company,
representando the General Fruit Company,
Messrs. Congo and Dan,
señores Congo and Dan,
of United Telephone and Telegraph Company,
de la United Telephone and Telegraph Company,
Mr. Petty,
señor Petty,
Regional Vice President of the Pan American Mining Corporation,
regional de la Pan American Mining Corporation,
Mr. Robert Allen of South American Sugar,
señor Robert Allen de la South American Sugar,
and Mr. Michael Corleone of Nevada,
y señor Michael Corleone de Nevada,
representing our associates in tourism and leisure activities.
Y actividades de placer.
And my old friend and associate from Florida.
Y mi viejo amigo y asociado de la Florida.
Mr. Hyman Rose.
Señor Hyman Rose.
You know something, I got a small staff. Beowulf is the producer and Phil is the sound producer. God knows, but I get these ideas and they could dig this up for a minute. I thought that was clever and funny, don't you? Give me a round of applause for Phil and Beowulf for pulling that one out of the hat. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. You know, I'm groping already. We're playing fake applause on the Savage Nation. I'm not groping. I'm having a good time. It's Friday. But, Phil, that was funny. It did match, not in the sense that any of these fellas, none of them have any ties to anything nefarious. I'm just saying it just sort of, let's say, smacks of something untoward. It's kind of tawdry that you can't find a list of these fellas flying with the president to Brazil anywhere, and certainly not an NPR. They have a budget of $1 billion a year. Go on NPR. Tell me if you could find that list. Maybe now after I broke it on the Savage Nation. $1 billion a year. Now compare it to what you pay for me. And look what I just gave you, the list of the people traveling with them. You say, big deal. What's the big deal? Well, all right, if you don't know the big deal, then don't listen to the show. If you don't see anything weird that the boss for Sandy Berger, who was caught stealing state secrets in his underwear and socks, is flying with the president to Brazil, then I can't help you. That's all. Why Brazil all of a sudden? What's with Brazil? A few years ago, it was like the slums and shooting each other in the tin houses. Now, all of a sudden, they're doing better than we are? I wake up, now suddenly Brazil's past America. How did that happen? In a few short years after Clinton, Bush, and Obama, suddenly we're behind Brazil. Probably in science and math we are, for sure. I guarantee you. The kids in the slums probably have a better knowledge of science they do in Rio than they do here with what they teach them. Play a little Irish music for me, the dance, the river dance music, before I go to my next opinion on something. The river dance, the river dance, the river dance, the river dance. The river in Rivington Street. Rivington Street, River Dance. Sinus is to me. Little high step. in there down by the river so the king could select his date for the night. That's how it started. Oh, now it's all polished up, you know. The origin of the river dance is pretty clear to me. All right, bring them all down, and we throw with the mutton about 10 o'clock. Bring in 1,000 of them. I want to see them dance by the shore. Like, think about it. It's like Charlie Sheen, the king, the ancient princes and kings, the murderers, right? I bring me 1,000 of them down here. But they never mind. I don't want to hear about their age. If their dad causes any trouble, put them in irons. So, okay, now where were we? Where would you like to go now, ladies and gentlemen? Where can I take you on the Savage Nation? Getting some nice emails from people who are actually listening. I don't know if you are. Millions of people, I never hear from anybody, sitting here on a hill, looking down at the rain, you know, looking down at the rainy, beautiful San Francisco Bay in between storms, inhaling do I got radiation yet? I think it came already. I inhaled it. I didn't feel it personally. And I don't have a Geiger counter, to be honest with you. I'm not altered. I will not eat sushi. As it is, I'm picky and very finicky. But I don't know where the fish right now. I'm going to lay off any for a long while. The sushi's out. I know that's the next. There's nothing to fear. The rice is from here. I'm not eating rice from anywhere but California. I haven't for years. I only buy organic rice from Sacramento, by the way. The Sikh people went into the rice growing business when they came here like 30 years ago. They grow the wonderful rice up there in the Sacramento Delta. I do not eat imported rice. No, I need melanin in my rice, right? I need melanin rice from China. I told you, there's a Japanese restaurant nearby. They changed owners. The rice is from hunger. You could puke. I can tell you by the taste it's no good. I don't need any kind of detection system. I have a very fine sense of taste. I don't have to read a book or an article. I can tell you the rice is no good. They're buying it from China. I can guarantee it. Here's an email from a friend of mine who listens to the show, Michael. You're talking about Romeo. She says, it was so exciting to finally be old enough to order wine with your spaghetti. In fact, I think I had my first legal drink there. It was on 14th Street near Stuyvesant Town where my uncle had the store. We got the roast pork sandwiches, the illicit roast pork sandwiches. Remember those days they sold Rheingold? With the Rheingold girls, they were all like Eva Braun. They looked like Eva Braun in those days. I never understood that type. I don't know. It's like Jane Mansfield. I had friends. They were such idiots. They all wound up in the garment center, that type. Ooh, look at Jane Mansfield. She's got... I don't know. There was no tractor. Like, so what? Why do they have to look like a Cadillac with a dress on? So where were we when I got distracted? You want news, views, or reviews? It's Friday. Give me a break. Well, I'll do the heavy stuff if you'd like. I mean, whatever you like. I'll take requests on the Savage Nation. The news is dismal. It's horrible. We have an incompetent president, the worst in American history, the absolute worst. I don't need a poll to come out from some fake group. There is no question he's the most incompetent president in American history. And if we had a parliamentary system, there'd be a vote of no confidence, and he'd be gone. He'd be back with a staple gun in Chicago on a lamppost. He'd be running Rahm Emanuel's mayoral campaign. They'd start him all over again, saying, look, we got you the top spot, man. You screwed up. All right, let's start you down in the streets again. Here's the Alinsky manual. Come back in 30 days. Here's the stapler. Go put out some posters. That's all. We'll make sure you're taken care of, but you blew it. Okay, we gave you 2 years. Man, you screwed things up. The party set back 125 years from what you did, Barry. You know what I'm saying? All right, you really blew this one, man. How'd you do this? All right, here's the staple gun. Come back in a month. But those aren't going to happen. We don't have a parliamentary system. We have a dictatorship in this country, which every 4 years is punctuated by a temporary democracy. Did you know that? Did you understand that that's the exact form of government we have? We have a dictatorship punctuated by democracy every 4 years. The rudiments of democracy is all bought out anyway, by and large. That's why they freaked out with the tea parties. How dare you? How dare you, peons, stand up to us? How dare you assert yourself? How dare you tell us we can't spend money that even you can't provide? How dare you? We're on drugs, and we'll spend as much as we want. I'll whip in the morning. I'll whip in the afternoon. I'll whip at night. I whip and I whip and I whip because I'm the whip, and I got the whip, and I got the gavel, and I'll jam this down your ugly little stupid peonic throats, and I'll fly around in Air Force One and Air Force Two and Air Force Three, and if there's no Air Force One, Two, or Three, I'll take a 760, and if I can't get a 760, my son son-in-law will take a 550. And if you can't give him a 550, I want another Air Force plane because I can whip in the morning, I can whip in the afternoon, and I can whip in the evening. I'm just an old whip. Let's hear the whip clip.
I never stop whipping. There's no beginning, there's no middle, and there's no end. My life is a constant whip operation.
Hey, look what we got. The Age of the Woman. The Age of the Woman, 1994. They blessed us with the Age of the Woman. It was going to be a great new age. More honest. Yeah, more honest. This is what we wound up with Nancy Pelosi and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. That's all. It started with Madeleine Albright. That was terrific, The Age of the Woman. Really produced great results. Barbara Boxer was a harbinger of things to come. Dianne Feinstein, another harbinger, but you didn't learn. We needed this now. A whip in the morning and a whip in the afternoon, and he's on the way to Brazil and no one says a word. At least Obama Elementary School is closing its doors, citing low enrollment. Apparently not enough people want to have a child turn into a communist. So they're closing the elementary school. The Marxism playbook is 1-800. So where are we? Robert De Niro. I was interested in that. Him testifying against the art director accused of stealing from his father's art collection. But I don't like the look. He looks like Nick Nolte. He's starting to look like the Nick Nolte look. What is that all about? I don't want to see him wandering around on the Upper West Side. You know what I'm saying? Like, would they have to... Aaron Gobra, that's all I can say to you. Just don't say it on the New York subway. Just don't say Aaron Gobra on any public conveyance in America today because you'll get arrested for having committed a verbal assault on Aaron. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Michael Savage back here. Had a gluten-free breakfast bar for lunch today. I wonder what this gluten mania is. I mean, I have a doctorate in nutrition. I like gluten. Everyone's obsessed with gluten-free. They think they found, like, the holy grail. It's a protein that is in wheat and related species, including barley and rye. It keeps dough elastic. It helps dough keep its shape, and it gives the final product a little chewy texture. Now, there are some known gluten sensitivity cases. Very few, but it's an obsession right now. Now everyone's gluten. They go to some quack, and he discovers you are allergic to gluten, and they don't eat gluten. They think that they've solved the world's problems. And they find out that they're allergic to gliadin, and now this is the reason that they've had an inferiority complex all their life, why they're small, why they're fat, why they're tall, why their wife left them, why their mother hated them, why their grandmother beat them. It was all because of gluten and spaghetti. it's in America. Everybody jumps on these fads and they think that they found the holy grail for every problem in their life. It's unbelievable to me. Sure, there are some people with sensitivities to gluten, but now everybody is gluten-free, this, gluten-free, that. So I'm in a new studio. Someone left a box of gluten-free breakfast bars. I had one for lunch. I never felt better. Maybe I'm allergic to gliadin. For me, it could be all those problems caused by gluten. What do I know? But because I'm a doubting Thomas, it's like Y2K. Everything to me is a Y2K fad. You know what I'm saying? It's true I had coffee before the show, which is a killer because now I can't drink after the show. That's the killer. If I have coffee during a show or before it, this late in the day, then I can't have alcohol. It's a smasheroo. But I'm suffering for your sins, you know, you, my audience. You got to understand, for me to have a gluten-free bar in lieu of a hot lunch, let me back up. I remember now, before that I ate some sushi that was left over in the refrigerator from yesterday. It's the pre-Fukushima sushi that I bought. It was like the last batch that I was sure didn't come from Japan. So I ate it. Like, I loved it. It was a little hard, the rice, but it was pre-Fukushima sushi I had. Then I had the gluten-free bar. I got like a hunger jag, and it was too late to get lunch. Then I really made a mistake. I had coffee. I'm flying. I haven't taken a call yet. Almost 2 hours of the show, not a caller. Maybe it is the gluten.
Savage.
I want to thank this distinguished group of American industrialists
a este distinguido grupo de industriales norteamericanos
for continuing to work with Cuba,
por continuar trabajando con Cuba,
for the greatest period of prosperity,
por el más grande periodo de prosperidad
in her entire history,
en toda nuestra historia.
Mr. Williams, secret list of those traveling with Obama to Brazil. Again, it's just all in good jest. Come on. I'm just being comedic in the political arena. You know I have no real insights. I don't have the budget of NPR with their objectivity. And, of course, since they didn't report that it was Jeffrey Immelt, Aris Kandris of Westinghouse, James Hackett of Endarco Petroleum, John Faraci of International Paper, Anthony Harrington of Albright Stonebridge Group traveling with the president to Brazil because you couldn't find it in the American papers, doesn't mean that there's any scandal involved. I mean, they hid it for obvious reasons because you're the peons of America and you don't need to know. You see, America now is a new country because there's no longer a free press other than in very limited outlets. You're told things on a need-to-know basis. You're like a child to Obama and the people who control him and put him in power. And if they could screw you like they did before the meltdown and during the meltdown, which started with Bush, by the way, and the head of the SEC, not an investigation yet of the former Treasury Secretary, not one peep. How does a guy go from Goldman Sachs to Treasury Secretary and then in the dark days of the meltdown convert Goldman Sachs from a private bank into a commercial bank to benefit from the laws that were just passed, and there's not a peep out of anybody, is not a mystery to me. This is what happens when you have an electorate that's asleep. So what should I kill myself over, eat myself up over it for? I already got paid back for standing up to George Bush with the Dubai ports deal. They banned me from Britain. It was Bush. I traced it back. I can't prove it for sure, but you Bushy should know that, you love him. Good luck to you. I'm an independent conservative. I don't ascribe to any party. All I can tell you is my new novel, which is going to come out August, September, is going to blow the stops out of everything, abuse of power. You'll see how much I think of both parties and where it goes. It's all fiction, of course. My main character is not me. I don't want you to confuse it with reality. And by the way, I was thinking about that gluten thing. I think that the people are almost right when they think that everything's caused by gluten. It's actually gluttony maybe the problem, not gluten-free. Symbol shot, ka-ching. I just thought about it. Gluttony may be the problem, not gluten-free. Not bad. It has a nice ring to it. I know that gluttony doesn't have gliadin in it, which you can blame for all your problems. But gliadin is a phenomenal protein. So they're taking the protein, the biggest protein source, in the wheat out of it and throwing it away and using it for cattle feed. No wonder they feel good. They're starving to death. Another symbol shot. Thank you. I need some sound effects, guys. It's already 95 minutes into the show, and I haven't taken one call. It's the gluten-free and the coffee that's doing it. That's all. I got a whole weekend ahead of me to go through the book. Every morning I get up at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. The manuscript, it's 425 pages. I'm going over it word by word by word. And believe me, you keep finding, this wouldn't work. How do you know? You know, novel's much different than nonfiction because, the plot doesn't make sense. Like, in one plot, the main character's name I won't give you, he has a dog named Eddie. No relationship whatsoever to Teddy. And the character's dog, his name is Eddie. He's an 11-pound poodle who's gray. Has no relationship to Teddy, who's an 11-pound poodle that belongs to me. Anyway, in one of the particular scenes, I just found this morning that I'd written that he was left in an apartment while the main character goes somewhere, and I realized that could never work. So I had to take that out. You see what I'm talking about? How nice? I feel like I'm working on a 25,000-piece puzzle. And it's a pleasure for me because my mind is not active challenged enough lately. The 25,000-word piece puzzle, and all the pieces have to move right. Otherwise, you can't make the picture. I think you're going to love this book, but I'm way ahead of myself. I'm just excited by it. That's all. I'm going to take a spring break. The president's going on his today to Brazil. Allegedly, it's, for business. But we know that with the wife and the mother-in-law and the kids, it's all a vacation. Because, see, look, he worked hard this week. We got the basketball scores. You had the basketball teams in last week. Then you had some mess going on in the Middle East he didn't want to be bothered with. Then something about Japan blowing their top with some reactor. It's too much for anyone, you know what I'm saying? All these kids having a good time in Orlando and in Daytona Beach. Why shouldn't he take off a couple of weeks at $75,000 a day? And then talk about the environment and green. Jeffrey Immelt is going to produce. What's he flying there, on a green jet? They're not flying there on green jets, are they? So that's why the whole thing is, okay, that's the picture. I'm looking at this thing with Robert De Niro and testifying that some Ganef art dealer stole the money from his father's paintings. And there's a picture of his father in the New York Post. I'm shocked. He looks just like his father. A stunner. I'm looking at the schmear job. Morse told the San Francisco gallery to wire the $77,000 sale price for the paintings, guitar case, and landscape with pink field directly into a personal bank account and never told De Niro, prosecutors allege. The buyers of the artwork were unnamed. You'll hear from Robert De Niro himself that the estate was never paid for those sales, Assistant DA Ken Kearns said. The art business is filled with crooks from top to bottom. Everyone I knew in the art business told me it was all a con. First of all, no one knows what anything's worth. It's all subjective. It's like the value of the dollar. I mean, what's the dollar value? It's all a matter of faith in what you think it's worth. Same with paintings. No one knows what it's worth. I mean, can you really tell talent from a lack of talent? Yes, in the age of the traditional art, you could. Today, when a guy can take a paintbrush and schmear and say, this is the Kooning-like and the schmear, I put an ashtray on top of it with a cigarette frozen in a certain resin, and then on top of it, we put a little bit of a vomit to make it look like the artist was stoned, and we sealed that up in resin and put it in the middle of the art floor with a light on it. That's worth $23 million, according to the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. I swear to God, I go into the museum here, but I love the traditional art, I got to tell you. Don't think I'm immune to modern art. I am not. Some of it I do enjoy, and some of it I can see is extremely talent, filled with talent. And a lot of it's filled with complete fakery and simply, child smearing on a canvas. You know that, and I know that. Just because you express yourself does not mean it's art. They haven't taught them that yet in an art school. That just mere expression does not mean it's art. It's the same with the direct poetry now they're teaching. That's why someone like whatever that name is, she always gets the award for the Poet Laureate of America. That's not art just because she gives you verbal diarrhea every day about something bad that happened to her as a child. And then when she became old, she was sad. And then I see the bluebird flying away from my fingers because I'm an old hag. And I get awards from people who don't even know why. That's some poem. It's not art. Art is like when I tell you art. So I go to the chamber concert the other day in a recital hall to show you something. Not to impress you. There were 14 people there, 20 people on a rainy night. And I see these young women playing a piece, the Kreutzer Sonata, the violin concerto. I can't believe anybody could be this talented at age 25. And you watch the fingers move, controlling the violin, and you say to yourself, look what a human being is capable of. It's enough to make you weep when you think about what most human beings are. When you think about what talent really is, and when you think of the 20 years it takes to be able to play a violin that well, and when you think about how most of us waste our lives and never develop a talent of any kind whatsoever, and most of us who don't at least respect those who do, the intelligent ones do, but then there's an entire audience in the peanut gallery who hates anybody who has any talent whatsoever, who hates anybody who achieves anything whatsoever. All they do is sit at home in dirty pajamas and sit and send hateful things on the internet with cyberbullying, making stuff up, and they think that that's intelligent. All they got to do is go watch a real musician. Go and watch a concert one day and look at the musicians. It's a little different, by the way, than sitting at home and hearing the CD. If you look at the musician, if you watch them playing, so it's the same with art. You got to understand that if you study these things, you can actually see where talent lies and where fakery lies. Okay, I didn't mean to get sidetracked because I really should have stayed with the big stuff, Egypt, salamanders, whatever we're talking about. The nuclear, I got my mind off the nuclear for a minute. I got a nuclear this. I'm afraid to turn on the news from one minute. Every morning I wake up, I go to Drudge, Fox News. And everything is horrible, what's going on. I almost wanted to adopt Japanese children yesterday, but they don't want to give them up for adoption. I'm not kidding you. I was thinking about it. They don't even want you to take them. They know they're coming. They get, like, mugged somewhere right away. I don't blame them. Like, they're better off being raised there somewhere. I would adopt two Japanese kids who lost their parents. That's the way I feel. I got the means. I like children. Can you imagine? I mean, it would be nice. I mean, help these kids out. You know they're going to turn out well. Like, certain kids you know are going to do well. Like, 99% will do very well from a certain country. Other countries, forget about, I'm not adopting. I love that one from Russia, the kids they adopted. Like, they get them out of homes where the kids are disturbed. It's sad the kid didn't know why. Or the mother was a drunk. So he looks good, blonde, blue eyes, surgery, looks like a a hero, right? They didn't know the kid was a psycho. And he starts bullying, beating up the parents, punching the other kids. So they try to give him back, and like Russia wants to sue the parents. We ain't taking him. You took him. You can't. No return policy. And yet, you bought it. You own it. You're not taking it back. If you don't break it, we don't buy it. That's all. Keep it. They wouldn't take him back. And they threatened to sue the parents who adopted the Russian kid. I don't even know what happened, what medication they put him on or what. Who knows? Probably working on the new NASA space shuttle. I'll be right back.
We celebrate together. Let us take a moment to appreciate all that Ireland has given to America. The faith we keep, the family we hold close, the laughter and song and warmth we feel when surrounded by the ones we love. On behalf of the American people, I want to thank the people of Ireland. In the years ahead, may our sons and daughters...
Phil, that's the Tarantala. He's talking about Ireland. All right, play it out already. Oh, that's Italian music. What's the difference? We're having a good time. It's Friday. You know, I've gone almost 2 hours without a phone call. It's amazing. Gluten-free and a coffee. Look at this. I'm starving. I need gliadin. Am I going to die? I need it so badly. I got to go get my gluten right after the show. I feel like I'm going to starve to death if I don't have gluten. I need my gluten fix. I am going to go have spaghetti tonight. I got news for you. I need that spaghetti and marinara sauce, gluten. And then I want a beer on top. I like a high gluten dinner because it makes me so groggy I fall asleep. What do you want to be alert for in the middle of the night? Don't you want to get knocked out? Isn't that the object of eating a big dinner, to go to sleep? I don't understand what people are. They don't figure it out. The reason people eat a lot of bread or spaghetti at night is to get tired. Where is it written you're supposed to be up 24 hours a day working and doing things? And I mean, what are you doing anyway in the middle of the night? There's nothing to do in the middle of the night. I get up early like a child again. I don't know what to do with myself. 5:30, I wake up, it's dark. I'm not going to go run. We got to be a lunatic to start running at 5:30. When I'm in Florida, I see people on the beach at 6 in the morning. I don't understand what's wrong with them. I know I don't have a house in South Carolina near the Marine base. These can't be normal people running at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm joking. If you want to stay healthy that way, I admire you for it. I'm just not going to do it. I usually get up. I look at the dog. I take him down. I let him go out. I lock the door. I go back to sleep. I have phenomenal ideas. You know that Mark Twain? I don't know who. One of my heroes, one of my literary heroes when I was a young man, said that he got his best ideas at dawn. A lot of them did. You're not supposed to jump up and start exercising. You lie quietly in the room and you let your mind, when it's calm, start to think quietly early in the morning. There's no garbage trucks. There's no nothing, if you're lucky. And your mind will produce amazing thoughts early in the morning, before you get up. Try that for exercise. Exercise your mind without medication. Instead of rushing for a vitamin or this or that, see what your mind comes up with. Don't be afraid to think. I'm afraid to tell you this. Americans are afraid to think. They're terrified to use their minds. And particularly the younger people, they've been brainwashed into groupthink by our school systems and by the conformity and the conformist mentality of their peers. They're afraid to think for themselves. And they're also afraid of what their mind's going to say. It's like an enemy to them. It's like a foreign body, their brain. And they do anything to block it out. They go to a restaurant, you can't eat. Screaming and yelling, put a glass of wine in them. And a yelling, screaming. Who could eat around that? Everything can't be that funny. You have people in a restaurant like, someone says something that's an extraordinary, like, woman laugh, like a screech. How could it be that funny? Because they're paying for two glasses of wine at $9 a piece. That's funny unto itself, so she better laugh. So when she goes home, she could say she had a good time. But all right, what I'm saying is, let your mind work early in the morning. You can't believe what your mind could come up with. Like this morning, just give you an example. Then I'll go on with the news, I swear to you. I was thinking about my novel early in the morning. There's some scenes that are bothering me. There's one scene on a tiny island in the book that takes place in San Francisco Bay that is an uninhabited island that is occupied by cormorants and gulls and pelicans. It's a small spit of a piece of a rock that juts out in the bay that I've seen 100 times as I goes by my boat. But it plays a kind of important role at some point in my novel. I'm not going to tell you, right? So I wrote it a certain way where I said the island was occupied by cormorants and gulls, and the pelicans had taken over the grassy side of the island, right? So it was bothering me, and I said, this is like a huge painting, and this little island is no bigger than the size of a pinky nail in this monster painting, but the detail on this pinky nail in my novel has to be perfect. So this is what's plaguing me now, is how to paint that island. So I go back and I rewrite it like this. I change the lines, if I can remember correctly. I don't have it in front of me. I write, the island is uninhabited except for cormorants, gulls, and some other bay birds, with the exception of the grassy side of the island, which was dominated by the pelicans, period, by two nesting pelicans, period, amongst animals as amongst humans. Or I said, as in humans, the strongest have the best real estate. Now, I thought that was a beautiful line. Now, you may say, big deal. What's the big deal? Well, everything is a big deal because you didn't do it. And when something is good, as a writer, I got to tell you something. You know it's perfect when you think you read it somewhere and you didn't. Or you say, that's so obvious. Why is it so well done? Because it's perfect. It's called a perfect line. I wrote a perfect line this morning. The point I'm making is I was proud of myself because it came to me at 5:30 in the morning when instead of getting up and starting with the day with the computer, I laid there in the dark after taking the dog out. My mind started to think about that scene. So I thought it was a perfect line. So you can do it too. I'm sorry to get sidetracked. I know you'd rather hear about gluten, Brazil, Soros. He didn't come up yet today. Communism. Communism didn't come up once. I think once, yes, said, with a communist mind is a terrible thing to waste when they closed the Barack Obama's elementary school in New Jersey. That was funny. What else? Everyday fraud. Fraud this, fraud that. Another fraudster they're putting away. 10 million, 20 million. It's Piker's money. It's the trillions that you should be looking at. I whip in the morning, I whip in the afternoon, I whip in the evening. Officials saying Gaddafi's violating the ceasefire. There, you got your red meat? No. You're kidding me. An Arab lied? Shocking. The CAIR will call me tomorrow. You're kidding. An Arab dictator lied? He will correct the line now. An Arab dictator lied? Shocking. Gaddafi violating the ceasefire? How many times can you threaten him and not do it? It's like the guy's going to get in the fight. You lift that finger one more. You push me one more time, you're going to get it. The guy pushes him again. I'm telling you, you push me one more time, I'm going to haul off and belt you. The guy pushes him again. This is Gaddafi. Barack Obama said nothing for 31 days. France said nothing. England said nothing. The Arab League, which says nothing ever except to condemn Jews, even they said, stop him, please. So after the Arab League came out this week and said, stop him, please, France finally said, all right, we're going to do something. And even Britain, the busted suitcase of the West, Britain flew in some jets, which they still have left over that they use for training, I think. They got rid of the Harrier jets. They were too effective. And they flew them in there into a landing area. They're getting ready to use them. So what would you do if you were Gaddafi, a murderer, who were killing the opposition over and over again? If you kill one more village, you blow up one more town, then we're going to unleash the NATO air forces on you. So blow up another town. Are you kidding? You went over the line this time, Gaddafi. You kill another 1,000 people and that's it. You're going to hear from us. We're going to drop cheese. See, Reagan wasn't like Obama or like Sarkozy. Despite his flaws, he was an imperfect man. Gaddafi gave him trouble. He moved the aircraft carrier into the Bay of Tripoli. He launched F-15s. They shot some missiles right into Gaddafi's tent. Then he was calm for 15 years. He did nothing thereafter. For 15 years, he stayed at home and mutilated his people. He had all the young women that he wanted, whatever, the cigars, whatever. And that we didn't hear from him for 15 years. Then he sees weakness. He's back again. That's all. What else do you need to know? Common sense. Common sense from an uncommon mind. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
President is on his way to Rio this evening. He needs a vacation. After all, he had a busy week trying to fill out basketball scores. And St. Paddy's Day yesterday. It's a heck of a week. He's entitled to another vacation. Well, they're not calling it a vacation. The president has justified his trip by saying, well, the reason I'm leaving, even though there's a nuclear meltdown in Japan, there's a financial crisis in America, there's a budget nightmare in America, the Middle East is on fire, the UN just declared a no-fly zone over Libya, and I had to go along with it reluctantly because, damn, I didn't want to make a decision on that one. Well, that's why I'm going to Rio, because, well, I need to create jobs in America. That's why I'm going to Rio. I started out to go to Rio, I guess, as a song we should play, and we will play it. But it's incomprehensible that a man can get away with this at a time like this. It's incomprehensible that we have a system that is so corrupt that he's not removed from office for incompetence. Crimes and misdemeanors are one thing. How about pure incompetence? Is that another? And maybe that should be added to the Constitution. Anyway, we have an exclusive on the Savage Nation. My crack producer, Beowulf Rockland, did some research for me at my suggestion, and I said, wait a minute, why is he going to Rio when he knows this is a PR disaster for him? There's only one reason: money, moolah, geld, dinero. What do we mean by that? We mean that Obama's running for office again. And so, therefore, he promised some captains of industry, so to speak, that if they paid a certain amount towards his reelection campaign, this is my guess now, he would take them on this junket to Brazil where they could do business. We looked up who was traveling with Obama to Brazil, and we couldn't find it. It's nowhere except here. Beowulf found it in Brazil, in Portuguese. Would you like to hear the names? Because we got them. Oh, you betcha. Jeffrey Immelt, CEO of General Electric, the folks who gave us the reactors in Japan. James Hackett, Anadarko Petroleum Corporation. Anthony Harrington, Albright Stonebridge CEO. That's the group to which Sox is attached. Don't you know who I mean by Sox? Sandy Berger. Anthony Harrington is Sandy Berger's boss. It's a consulting group, so-called. He's on the trip. And so I'd like to emphasize again the secret list of those traveling with Obama to Brazil, because it's worth noting that this is an exclusive, so far as I know, to the Savage Nation, okay? So the president is heading off to Brazil, as we said, and we've given you an exclusive of who's on the trip with him: Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, James Hackett of Anadarko Petroleum, Anthony Harrington of Albright Stonebridge Company. And you say, well, why not? The answer is, why would he go now, other than he's probably promised them, you know, access to Brazil, Brazilian markets, with the prestige of the presidency, if certain deals were made for his reelection. I mean, that's all I can figure out. Anyway, there's a lot going on, and Obama is now known as the weakest president in history, they're calling him. Who's calling him that? The liberals. The liberals. Yeah, that's right, liberals in the U.K., ineffectual, invisible, unable to honor pledges, and now blamed for letting Gaddafi off the hook. Why Obama's gone from yes we can to maybe we shouldn't, right? It's unbelievable to me. It says Obama's campaign slogan was mesmerizingly simple and brimming with self-belief: yes we can. His presidency, however, is turning out to be more like no we won't. Even more worryingly, she writes, it seems to be very much about maybe we can do what exactly. The world feels like a dangerous place when leaders are seen to lack certitude, but the only thing President Obama seems decisive about is his indecision. What should the U.S. do about Libya? What should the U.S. do about the Middle East in general? What about the country's crippling debts? What is the U.S. going to do about Afghanistan and about Iran? The answer is Obama's doing nothing. Nothing. What the president is not doing is being clear, resolute, and proactive, which is surely a big part of his job description. This is what he has to say about the popular uprising in Libya. Gaddafi must go. You hear this? This is unbelievable to me. Anyway, that's coming from liberals in Europe. They're calling him the most ineffectual president in history. And now let's go to michaelsavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, for a quick update. Judge temporarily blocks Wisconsin's new labor law. Take a look at the judge. Take a look at the hack Democrat judge that they got there. Looks like she couldn't fill out a parking ticket. Obama escapes to South America. Don't miss this. I'm celebrating my 69th birthday, God willing, on March 31st. And Jeff Kuhner of Washington Times says, Britain is sacrificing Michael Savage on the altar of multiculturalism. I wouldn't ask you to read it unless I thought it was well written. It is well written. Print it. Send it. Enjoy it. Minuscule radioactive fallout reaches U.S. What the heck? Okay, 1-800-449-8255. Loyal Japanese dog leads rescuers to mate. You got to see this picture of a shaking, cold little dog after the tsunami and the earthquake. A little tan or white spaniel was sitting there shaking next to her friend who was dying and wouldn't leave its side. Both have been rescued. That's more than I can say for America. That's it from the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I picked Kansas last year.
I know to win it.
To win it, and I got hurt. But you know, I'm looking at those twins, the Morris brothers. I think they've got depth. They've got experience. And although Louisville's a terrific team, I don't think they can beat Kansas. Last year, I did not pick Duke, and Coach K gave me a hard time. So I'm going with Duke getting to the Elite Eight.
I am the mark of a real leader. We got Japan melting down. We got the Middle East on fire. We got the currency at the lowest point against the yen since World War II after we beat Japan and Germany. And we have a president showing such steely resolve that on the order of one of the great leaders of all time, he's focusing instead on night basketball and on things of that nature. He's not giving into the panic that you weenies, you know, are worried about. Fallout, the crashing dollar, bankruptcy. This is not bothering him. Because he's got it all under control, and that's why he's able to celebrate St. Paddy's Day and then fly off to Brazil to make certain that George Soros' investments in Brazilian energy are being taken care of. You understand this is the mark of real leadership. And that's the important thing to know. It's important to know that we have such a stable man at the helm. That's all. So that's it. U.S. says plants' spent fuel rods are dry. Japan says no. They're flooding out of there, by the way. They're leaving. They're flooding. You know, here in San Francisco, I walked around by the waterfront, by the ferry terminal. I love that place. I bought an onion bread. Life goes on. I mean, life goes on. I bought an onion bread. It's filled with mainland Japanese youngsters there. I don't mean children. They're all flying in here. I read in New York, they're taking their parents in, which is good. America's great. We have unlimited resources. We can bring in, give me your hungry, your needy, and your wanting from around the world. Bring everybody in, Egyptians, Algerians, Tunisians, Japanese, whoever needs to come to the succor of America. Bring them all in. After all, we have an unlimited capacity for dealing with tragedy all over the world. Suddenly it's 1952 and there's the Marshall Plan. There's Hillary Clinton running around the world writing checks as though they're her checks. And Obama, as I say, is flying off to Brazil for another vacation with family, en famille. That's good. It's a young family. He's a young fella. He's on top of things. You don't expect him to give up family life for the presidency, do you? Let's see. More governments advising citizens to leave Tokyo. Petraeus reveals that son served in Afghanistan. Good for him. Rebels battle the whole city under Gaddafi siege. That's a big story, the rebels. Was that rebels without a cause? This is a horrible thing, but I'm actually rooting for Gaddafi. Because although he's a monster, it's Al-Qaeda who wants to take over Libya. I don't think you can comprehend that whole part. It's horrible. It's a Hobson's choice between Hitler and Stalin. You know what I mean? The devil you know and all of that. The knee-jerk reaction is the rebels are good. But better be careful there. What else is in the news? Oh, it's everything. It's a nightmare. Who could look at this anymore? That's why I had a corned beef sandwich. I figured, what the heck? If I'm going to get dusted a little bit with the meltdown, I may as well eat a corned beef sandwich before the end. I was going to have the buffalo stew in that dump, but I don't know. I feel bad for buffalo. I know they're lower in cholesterol, but I just can't eat buffalo meat. Enough of them were killed, I figured, by the early frontier monsters who shot them from trains and let them to rot on the plains. I mean, it was the Indians hunted them. They considered them sacred animals. They didn't slaughter them for sport. Like you goons going killing animals for nothing, slaughtering bears up in Nevada. Whoa, that gets me crazy. But you don't want to hear about that. Imagine cowards hunting bears in Nevada with dogs and bows and arrows and guns. Putting a bear up against the tree and having the bear ripped apart by dogs and then killing him with a bow and arrow and then telling you that they're brave. They're not brave. That's all. Elite Japan nuclear workers race to stop meltdown. Bahrain locks down kingdom as uprising surges. See, another unintended consequence of Brzezinski, Carter, Bush. Well, who knows, maybe Bush. Bahrain, Carter, and Obama. I mean, we have one of the largest naval bases around the world is in Bahrain. You'd like the rebels to win there, too? The youngsters in tight dungarees who all went to Berkeley somehow? Or where'd they all go to Berkeley and get a tight dungarees? They all come back with tight dungarees and a Facebook, and they cause a revolution. But then after they win, who takes over? The Muslim Brotherhood. They cut their throats, and then it's the Muslim Brotherhood or some other fanatic group. More governments advising citizens to leave Tokyo. U.S. drones allowed over its territory, says Mexico. Okay, let that one go. I can't deal with Mexico as well. Many anxious as exiled Haitian leader plots return. Is that an old story? Oh, God, look what I have to do for a living. What would you like me to talk about? I can give you intelligent answers, comedic answers. I could be comedic in the political arena. I could be political in the comedic arena. Whatever you'd like, okay? New York, Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, how you doing there? Quick question. What is wrong with Obama talking about March Madness in basketball? Tell me what is wrong with that, and what is your...
Well, for an idiot like you, it makes perfect sense. For a person disconnected from reality as you are, the typical sports-loving American male, that is something that you would consider to be leadership.
I'm not a sports lover. It's just the fact that you're demeaning this man because he's talking about basketball.
That's right. Of course, basketball is more important than Japan or Egypt, isn't it?
Savage, let me get it in. You're talking about...
Andrew, I asked you, is basketball more important than Japan, Egypt, or the current currency crisis in America? I mean, be serious now.
Does he have to talk about Japan 24 hours a day?
He doesn't talk about it at all, Andrew. He hasn't said one word about any of it.
And you're talking about what? You got stuff going on in Japan, you got stuff going on in Egypt. You know, you're forgetting he's the president of the United States. The United States. Now, if he was over there doing more stuff in Egypt and Japan, you would be saying, oh, my God, he's over there in Japan, and he's not worrying about the United States. I mean, he's damn if you do, damn if you don't.
Andrew, listen, I know you're very excited, and you assume that your excitement is the equivalent of intelligence and reason. But you have to understand that excitement does not equal intelligence and reason. It just indicates stupidity in your case. The world is laughing at him. We have a crisis in our own country of epic proportions. Are you aware the dollar fell to its lowest value against the yen since World War II? Do you understand what that means?
Yes, I understand.
Whoa, hold on. You say yes. What does that actually mean?
That means that the value of our dollar is actually decreasing. I know.
And don't you think that that's a crisis worthy of discussion by the President of the United States?
You have no idea if he's discussing that in behind
closed doors. Oh, you mean in between the night basketball and the barbecues, he's racking his brain when we don't even see.
Right.
He's sort of a Lincoln-esque figure who is suffering all night long with the woes of the world, and he's only putting on a happy face for us. Oh, I didn't see that, Andrew.
One thing that you think
he's really a great leader. He's really great. Is there anything he could do that would have you doubt him at all?
Yeah, it's things that he does that he can doubt. I mean, he's a little weak in the foreign policy. Of course, he can be a little stronger in foreign policy, but you can't.
What do you mean stronger in foreign policy? In which area?
They say that his relations dealing with the how he handles certain things and how he handles the war that's going on and people in Afghanistan not pulling out the troops and that his policy is a little weak. He's not that strong. And foreign policy. I mean, that's one of the big things to say. Oh, he's not a good foreign policy man. He doesn't do this and that.
So you agree he's weak on foreign policy? Oh, at least we have some common ground. And you say he's strong on domestic policy? In which area?
I believe he's done. I believe he's one of the first presidents that actually conquered that the health issue and actually tried to make some sort of dent.
Sir, what do you mean by conquered the health issue? Are you aware that this corrupt president has granted 1,000 waivers to Obamacare to anybody who pays their way out, they can get out? It's not even in the bill. Do you understand that this is total corruption? Are you aware of that, Andrew?
Right, but I don't. But what I'm saying is,
yeah, what you're saying is you're a dummy who doesn't know what he's talking about, and you just still have an opinion because you're from New York, and you figure a big mouth equals intelligence. Do you understand that 1,000 waivers that are not even in Obamacare were granted to individuals and corporations who don't want any part of this nightmare called Obamacare? By the way, are you willing to pay for health care for illegal aliens yourself?
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Well, that's it. But wait a minute, Andrew. It's in Obamacare. It means that this conquering of this health mess that you just referred to, part of it includes health care for illegal aliens, and you have to pay for it. How can you say that that's a good thing?
Well, I never said that you're somebody that...
Andrew, come on. You're putting on a fake New York accent. It's not even you. Stop faking the New York accent, Andrew. I know it's not even real. Which show do you work for, Andrew?
I don't work for no show.
Do. I can hear the faker. All right. You had a little fun. It was a nice relaxation. That's all. I needed a little run for my money. So if you don't like my snide comments, I suppose you can turn the show off and listen to some professional on NPR who will give you the absolute truth about everything, as you well know. You know, there's no bias there. This is the Savage Nation where one man's opinion rules. I try to back up my opinion with facts where they're possible, but I believe that my snide comments about Obama's obsession with basketball and vacations is appropriate. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's a report not being covered by our media about a shipment of possible nuclear weapon parts being shipped from China to Iran that was seized by Malaysia. Joining us now is an ex-Revolutionary Guard member, Reza Khalili, with a report on this for the Savage Nation. He joins us now with his voice modulated to protect his identity. Reza Khalili, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's great to be on your show, Michael. Well, with the current turmoil in the Middle East, war in Libya, a state of emergency in Bahrain with Saudi forces entering that country, uprising in Yemen, and total confusion and lack of action by President Obama's administration, and with the focus of the world on the tragedy in Japan, the Iranian leaders feel that it's most opportune time to take action on their plans for the region and the world. Just in the last couple of weeks, several ships and planes filled with arms have been confiscated on its way to Iran or from Iran to Syria. The Israeli Navy on Tuesday intercepted a German-owned Liberian flagship carrying Iranian weapons destined for Palestinian groups in the Gaza. Then on Wednesday, Turkey stopped an Iranian arms plane en route to Syria carrying military equipment and weapons, and reports are that the cargo carried some suspected nuclear material. On Thursday, there were two reports, one that South Korea and Singapore have intercepted nuclear and weapons material bound for Iran, and then the news that you just referred to, that the Malaysian police have seized suspected nuclear parts shipment from a ship that left a Chinese port bound for Iran. Now, it's very important to note that China has been collaborating with the mullahs in Iran ever since the Islamic Revolution in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
I made several reports on that to the CIA while working as a spy in Iran, and I've stated it in my book, A Time to Betray, in detail. One of my reports was on how China was continuously providing arms to the Revolutionary Guards despite U.S. arms embargo then, and how they were even training the guards in a base in China, also providing them with silkworm missiles threatening the security of the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz, where over 40% of world's oil supply passes through. This is why China openly denied any collaboration. So it's of utmost importance to be aware of this relationship, as they are helping Iran with its nuclear program, despite what they are publicly saying, just like how they helped Pakistan to become a nuclear-armed state. And I want to reiterate here, I believe that President Obama's lack of ability to deal with world crisis is going to permanently damage our security and our national interests in one of the most important regions of the world, the Persian Gulf. And as our enemies are calling, the end of American supremacy is at hand.
Why is the media covering this up?
Well, you see, the mainstream media has become something similar to the fast food industry. They just take the daily headlines and then report it without going into detail, without doing research, without looking at the priorities and the dangers that are threatening the world. And you've got to look at the Middle East. I mean, how did it get so much out of hand? It's because from day one, this administration had no idea, no clue how to deal with these uprisings and how to deal with the governments of the world, how to stop the downhill action that is being taken in the region. I mean, look at Bahrain. It's getting out of hand. The Saudis are sending military to stop the uprising. The Iranians are helping the Shiites, even smuggling arms to incite the uprising. And you can find Iran's interference in all of these matters across the region.
True.
And we are not confronting this danger. This is the problem. We have stopped taking any action against the Iranian leaders, allowing them to do what they want, even with their nuclear program, which is going to pose a horrific dangers to the world security.
How do we get to this point?
Well, it's been going on for a long time. I mean, ever since the Islamic Revolution, the Iranian leaders have indicated their purpose for the region and for the world, and that's glorification of Allah and the rule of Islam all over the world. And they've been saying that they want to export this ideology, which they have successfully done. I mean, look at Lebanon. Now, Hezbollah rules. Look at Syria, is totally collaborating with Iran, and the Palestinians, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Venezuela, African countries, they are in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood, they are in bed with the opposition in Yemen, in Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, they are collaborating with Al-Qaeda, they are expanding on their terrorist activities around the world, and they are helping Taliban into hurting our military force in Afghanistan, and they're helping every faction in Iraq to resent the American presence, and they're hoping that America would leave that country so they can directly interfere with its matters. We've allowed them for three decades to do what they wanted, and we missed the biggest opportunity in 2009 when the Iranians came out to the street in millions to overthrow this regime, and we backed away from that because we hoped negotiations would result in better solutions for our interests. And this is what I've been saying. You cannot negotiate with people who are willing to be martyred to glorify Islam. And the leaders of Iran are a messianic people. This is a messianic regime. And unless and until that time that we confront them directly and help the Iranians overthrow this regime, the problems in the region and in the world is going to just get much, much worse.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
Well, no, and I can tell you clearly today, I'll go on record and state this, that things are going to get much, much worse, because once the Iranians get their hands on the nuclear arm, then they're going to take much more aggressive plans in expanding their ideology, in helping rebellious groups in uprising, in helping with overthrowing U.S.-backed governments in the region. And don't discount China and Russia. They would love to see our departure from the Persian Gulf. They would love to see governments in the region who collaborate with them as opposed to securing our interests. And I think all of this goes hand in hand. And unfortunately, this administration, everybody in this administration, and President Obama are acting as though they're totally clueless about these events.
What can we, the people, do?
It's going to be very difficult, but I think the people need to speak up. They need to call their representatives. They need to show their concern. And I think the Congress needs to raise these issues. We can't just allow this administration to act in the way they are doing because our national interests and security is of utmost importance. And we've been trying to keep that, to keep our interests, to protect our interests for decades. And we cannot just allow this administration create a situation where we lose total credibility in the world. So it's the people should call their representatives, and the Congress needs to raise a voice and try to change course.
Well, what's next?
But next, I think I've been saying this many, many times, and I have news for the Obama administration. The Iranians are planning to expand on their activities in the region. You're going to see much more bloodshed and conflicts in Bahrain, in Yemen, in Saudi Arabia, Oman, Qatar, Kuwait. We've got bases in all of those countries. We've got to change course right now. We've got to confront the Iranian leaders right now. We've got to tell them that we're not going to allow them to get their hands on nuclear bombs, and we're going to help their people to overthrow that regime. And then once we do that, the Iranians will become emboldened. They will come out to the streets, and this government will collapse, solving much of the problem of what's going on in the world. And we have to take immediate action.
Where can we read more?
Well, I appreciate that. I've been revealing news from Iran, from my contacts in Iran, and I've been reflecting the most updated news about the region and what we need to do, all the analysis on my website at timetobetray.com.
Reza Khalili, thanks for this expose. Thanks again for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is The Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
You know, when I first started in radio in 1994, I was on a local station, and I've always been very nationalistic because I'm still a Boy Scout. And I said that America is becoming much like Portugal, once a world leader, and eventually it will be of no significance whatsoever. And I said Portugal still exists, but it's of no import in the world. Well, the local newspapers laughed at me and said, Savage said, America's going to be like Portugal. Of course, I was right. The question is, can we stop this sweep of history with so many in the government and in the media and in the business community so intent on cashing out for the short term without looking to the long term? Now, let me pause right here because this is a good segue to something I want to get to. When have you last seen me on television? Can anyone listening to this show tell me the last time you saw me on Fox News? Can anyone listening to this show tell me when you last read about me in a major newspaper? The question is why? I mean, there are other so-called conservative talk show hosts who are seen and heard, but not me. Why is that? Is it possible because the others are wrapped within corporations that have deep business ties in China and elsewhere, and they toe the party line? They're told, okay, you could put on a little act of being patriotic, but don't go too far, Wallbanger. Don't go too far, Blackboard, or else we'll lose our deal in China. Is that possible? I have an article in my hand. I can't read you the whole thing. It's Why the Blackballing of Michael Savage? By Coach Dave Daubenmeer. And I had not heard of the gentleman, but you may remember him. Coach Dave Daubenmeer is the founder and president of Past Assault Ministries and Minutemen United, very important organization, and he has a small radio show. In 1999, the coach was sued by the ACLU for praying with his teams while coaching high school in Ohio. He now spends his energy fighting for Christian principles in the public domain. So he wrote the article entitled, Why the Blackballing of Michael Savage? And he says, I'm a talk radio addict. He says, I don't know how it happened to me or why, but there's something about the art that really sucks me in. He says, my favorite, if there is such a thing, is Michael Savage. Out of all the voices flying through the air, his is the one that seems to be most independent. Don't get me wrong, he says, I know that all of them are controlled to a certain degree, but Dr. Savage is the one who I think I can most trust to call him like he sees him. Well, let me correct you, Coach. I'm not controlled at all. Other than the dirty words or disparaging people we do business with or advertisers, which I would never do anyway, I am totally free to tell you as I call him like I see him. So make no mistake about it. He then goes on and he says, here's a list of America's top-rated talkers. All of them are conservative and are instrumental in shaping the thought process of millions of Americans. And he goes through the usual list. And he says, they all have TV, wait a minute, he goes down the list, and then he says, Republican good, Democrat bad, liberal bad, conservative good. He says, the Savage Nation is the fourth largest show. I believe it's the third, actually. Then he asks, can anyone tell me the last time you saw Michael Savage in any television show? And he said, radio hosts love to cross-pollinate. Wallbanger loves to share the opinions of others in radio. Laura Ingraham has a regular gig with Bill O'Reilly, often guest hosting for Bill. And then he names others who are on all of the time. And he says, why is it Dr. Savage seems to be so persona non grata in the controlled conservative media? Could it be that most of those listed above are nothing but political hacks, propaganda arms of the Republican Party, and that there are those in authority who do not appreciate how Savage so willingly undresses both sides of the political charade? And then he goes through a little bit more. But he says, why is Savage so blatantly blackballed from the conservative talk show club? According to Talkers Mag, Savage has a regular listening audience of over 8 million people a week, yet no one would recognize him if you passed him on the street. Why is it that a show this popular gets so little exposure in so-called conservative circles? Why has Michael Savage been banished to the conservative closet? Michael Savage is a real doctor, real PhD, that is. While neither Limbaugh, Hannity, nor Beck have a college degree, Dr. Savage has an earned PhD from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and nutrition science. He's written 28 books, four of which have made the New York Times bestsellers list. His latest work, Trickle Up Poverty, is currently burning up the printing presses, and his program is carried by about 300 stations around the country. Tell me again, when was the last time you saw Savage on Fox News? Now, I'm going to scan some of the things he says. He has no sacred cows. He made enemies in 2006 when he accused the Catholic Church of violating the law by giving assistance to illegal immigrants. He's talking about me. His theme of borders, language, and culture has served as a rallying call for the millions who tune in nightly. Well, let's see. There's a big one here. It was Savage who first informed America and ultimately led the fight to keep President Bush from turning control of our ports over to Dubai. His brief show on fascist MSNBC in 2003 was canceled after Savage was set up and sabotaged by a caller. So why have they banned him from the conservative boys club, he asks. And now here's an important part, I believe. The Savage Nation has a deep spiritual side to it. Unlike any other talk show host in America, Dr. Savage regularly reads aloud from the Bible. Although he keeps his personal religious beliefs to himself, he uses the Holy Scriptures as a warning to America of the consequences of our continued disobedience to God's laws. He certainly is not an evangelical Christian, but his call for our allegiance to the laws of nature and of nature's God reflects a greater spiritual depth than any of America's top talkers. Limbaugh refers to talent on loan from God. Wallbanger loves to quote John 14:1, but neither appear to have real understanding of the things of the Spirit, while Blackboard is a Mormon who loves to talk about God and our need to find our own path. So he says, what's going on? Why is Savage blacklisted? Perhaps it's because Savage still continues to push back against the darlings of Republicanism and often exposes that those in the government all receive their minor league training at Goldman Sachs. And then he goes on and on and on and on and on. And I'll conclude here. Savage is as conservative as they come. He often warns his listeners to beware of the government media complex. Could it be that his opposition to status quo government and his independent streak are a threat to those who are guardians of the conservative movement? Is that why Michael Savage is being blacklisted? Thanks, Dave Dabenmeyer. I really appreciate it.
I'm so young and you're so old. This my darling, I've been told. I don't care just what they say, 'cause forever I will pray. You and I will be as free as the birds up in the trees.
Oh. Who is the strong man who will replace the straw man that is running America? How is he going to overcome the China lobby, the Wahhabi lobby? Who is this person? I don't know who the person is, but I'll tell you this. It's strange, that, well, it's not really strange that a writer in England in a leftist newspaper wrote that we must assume the bowing position when it comes to China, that we must not upset the Chinese, that they themselves are simply following their own philosophy of Confucianism and Mandarinism and all of the highfalutin garbage. And the last thing we should do is confront China in any way, that we should be passive towards China, lest we set off either a trade war or something worse than that. The exact opposite is true. The only thing that could save America is the resurgence of a manufacturing base in this country. I'd like to see the factories reopen. I'd like to see the factories that once built the tanks and the jeeps and the airplanes running again in America. I'd like to see the shipyards running again. I'd like to see the steel factories opening up again. I'd like to see drilling in offshore of the United States of America for the first time off the West Coast to make us independent of the Wahhabi blackmailers. I would like to see slope drilling in Alaska. I'd like to see a lot of things done. And I need somebody to get into office who knows how to do it. I don't know who that man is. I know it's not Romney.
Savage.